to pay. Time for you to get down on your knees. I pray you say goodbye to the good old days. They're never coming back on the human race.
What's going on, everybody? Trying to get my buttons right here, my faders right, everything else right, and of course, I am messing it up. Story of my life. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Plum Love Food Live. I am your host. My name is Chef Flo. That's right, guys. I am a husband, I am a father, and I am a professional chef in this world today, which gives me carte blanche and therefore makes me an expert. That and the fact that I have a microphone right now and I'm talking to you. What's going on, you guys? I hope everything's doing well. Hope this podcast, this radio, digital audio broadcast finds you well. Everything is going well here for the most part. Kicking it. We got a great show tonight. We are talking to, it's funny, the guest that we're talking to tonight, I met last Saturday night at a party from some very, very cool new clients of mine. We talked for a long time while I was working. We hit it off. She's fantastic. Turns out, she's also very influential. We're talking to Maricel Salazar tonight, and she is a photo blogger, maybe is the best way to put it out. She's great with like digital marketing and branding and stuff. You can find her at Bread and Butter on Bread and Butter NYC on the Instagrams and stuff like that. I apologize, guys. I am kind of out of the game here. I got up really, really early this morning. I had TV this morning, and with everything else we have going on, I just could not sleep. My jackass got up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and then about 4:30, I should have to say. And then at 6, I am sitting at a place called Chips Pancakes in Trumbull, like a jackass by myself, having a giant breakfast. I don't know what my deal was. I couldn't sleep. It's just one of those days. I don't know why. There's a lot of pressure, a lot of anxiety, a lot of stressful things happening at the moment right now. So that's probably a lot to do. Let me turn this damn music off. I got it. We got a great intro song. We're all hardcore. Got it. Sorry, turn that shit down. There we go. I was up very, very early and doing, just God knows, I was just sitting there, man. I just was, and it was all this, like, acoustic music playing and, like, singer-songwriter stuff playing, and I was just feeling very, I don't know, what's the word? Like, I was very melancholy. Like, I was just very, I guess reflective is probably the right word. Just sitting in this pancake place, just being reflective and, you know, whatever it is. So ended up being a fine day. We ended up doing a fantastic job over at CT Style, hanging with our buddy and former show guest, Ryan Christopher, on CT Style. He does a great job over there. Big shout out to my man. We had a lot of fun. We were there today talking about Jamie Oliver's Food Revolution Day happening this Saturday in New Canaan, Connecticut. That's right, New Canaan, Connecticut, a pop-up park. What an amazing event this is going to be, and I'm very humbled to have the opportunity to be hosting it this year. We are the whole point of the event is to try to get kids to change their diet, change their eating habits, try something different, and this whole event's great. All these restaurants down in New Canaan have come together, and the kids have like a passport thing where they're going to walk around and have the opportunity to taste some new foods and taste some different things. And it's going to be a lot of fun. Each kid gets a present, and then if they complete their entire passport, they get a gift. It's a very cool thing, and it also is great to get kids eating new things and new foods that maybe they wouldn't eat. So we can get rid of the spaghetti, and we can get rid of the pasta with butter or the pasta with cheese, and it's just cool. And I'm excited to be a part of it. Very humbled to be a part of it. That's what it's about. And we were on the show today talking all about it. A lot of great sponsors for that stuff. Big shout out today to our friend at Walter Stewart's, a great local market in New Canaan, giving us all the produce and all the food that we needed to do our segment today. Anyway, a lot of fun. It's all about the food revolution. It's all about getting kids to eat more. If you want to find out more about this event, just go to Eventbrite and type in Food Revolution. It comes up. Tickets are $5 for kids. Adults are free. And it's going to be a lot of fun. It's happening this Saturday, 10 to 12 in the morning, pop-up park in New Canaan. If you're in the tri-state area and you have kids, I highly recommend you come check it out. It's going to be a lot of fun. So make sure you make that happen. As a lot of you guys know who follow me on social media, last week was a tough week in our family. One of we had a death, so to speak. I personally didn't, but my brother-in-law did, and it's very, you know, it's, I just feel so bad for the guy. You know, he's going through hell right now, and just, you know, want him to know that we're all thinking about him, and we feel terrible for you, dude, and you know, you're not alone. We're all here for you. And whatever we can do. So, you know, just one of those things, man, this show tonight's going to be for you. And, again, I feel terrible for you, but, I'm going to play you a song and then, we'll come right back. So, this is for you, Pete. And, we're thinking about you.
Glory, glory, hallelujah.
All right, guys, hang tight. We'll be right back. Hang in there. Checking out Plum Love Foods Live. Oh, that's right, guys. My knife is smarter than yours. That's right, smarter. I'm talking Ergo Chef Knives. The unique patented shape makes it more of an extension of your hand. The curved handle of an Ergo Chef Knives allows for a smoother cutting and less fatigue in your hand. Listen, I use these knives every day, and they are fantastic. They're my go-to knives. If I use a normal knife, like a regular chef knife anymore, my hands start to hurt and feel achy. Trust me, guys, I'm not making this up. These knives are the jam. Check them out at ErgoChef.com. That's ErgoChef.com. And tell them Chef Plum sent you by using the promo code PLUM15OFF. And get 15% off your purchase. Mike and Scott are great dudes over there, so check them out at ErgoChef.com. And you.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's live read time. That's right, guys. Check it out. Are you looking to buy something? We all want to buy something. We're always trying to buy stuff. Let me tell you where you're going to get it. You're going to get it at Amazon.com. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. If you're looking for, I was looking for, tea leaf tea, and I found it. It's blue. I found it on Amazon.com. Here's the thing. What I want you to do, go to ChefPlum.com, click on the Amazon banner, and then go to Amazon and get what you want to get. Because let me tell you what happens. They're going to throw me a couple of wooden nickels for going to the website, and it doesn't cost you a dime. And that's what they do to help keep this fine program on the air. So Amazon.com via PlumLoveFoods.com or ChefPlum.com.
At Brooklyn, now I'm down in Tribeca, right next to De Niro, but I'll be hood forever. I'm the new Sinatra, and since I made it here, I can make it anywhere. Yeah, they love me everywhere. I used to cop in Harlem, all of my Dominicanos right there up on Broadway. Pulled me back to that McDonald's, took it to my stash spot, 560 State Street. Catch me in the kitchen like a Simmons whipping pastry, cruising down A Street, off-white Lexus, driving so slow, but BK is from Texas. Me, I'm out that Bed-Stuy, home of that boy Biggie. Now I live on Billboard, and I brought my boys with me. Say what up to Tata, still sipping my ties. Sitting courtside, Knicks and Nets give me high five. Nigga, I be spiked out, I could trip a referee. Tell by my attitude that I'm most definitely from
New York.
Hey.
Oh, yeah, coming back live right now, guys. Listen, I couldn't think of a better song to bring in my guest right now. You're talking about someone who is so badass when it comes to doing social media with food. She has got NYC on the back end of her handle on Instagram. That's right. I'm talking about bringing some class. I'm talking about bringing a little bit of style. I'm talking about bringing, you know, bringing a little bit more of legitimacy to this fine program right now. I've got my friend, the one and only Maricel Salazar, come on here talking to me at Bread and Butter NYC. And listen, I couldn't bring you on with anything different than Jay-Z. I had to do it.
That was amazing. What's up, Chef?
What's going on? How are you?
I'm doing well. You're going to keep me way past that my bedtime, you know?
Oh, my God. Stop. I have three kids. What are you talking about? They're going to get me up at 4 a.m. because they want to go fucking play Connect Four or some shit. I don't know. I made up Connect Four.
That's your
knock for
the last talk. I like that intro. I like that intro.
Like,
at least it keeps
you
really good.
Classes, so. Well, here's what I'm doing. I'm actually trying to see how many attractive, smart food women I can get on the show this season because I need as much class and as much – anything that makes me look better is kind of the idea here. Well,
Chef, I'm about to insert a joke. You know, you have a voice for radio. You're pigeonholing me into it.
Thank you. Makes me feel great about myself. I'll be over here drinking a bottle of bleach. You can take over. So I was telling the story at the front half of the show here, how you and I met. I was doing an event last weekend, and you happened to be there, and we just started talking because you couldn't stop putting ribs in your mouth.
I mean, it was a little unfair, you know. It's like putting bacon in your pocket and walking up to a dog. I'm instantly your best friend. You had ribs and tacos. I was a goner.
Well, that was a fun party, and I'll tell you what, I became big fans of them. I don't want to say their names on the radio because you don't know if that's cool or not, but I really, really liked them, and they were great people. It was a lot of fun meeting. That party itself was a lot of fun.
It was amazing, and it was for the fact that not only you and I met, and I ate a ton of your food, and I didn't have to clean up the dishes afterwards. But we got to talk about more food and a lot to do with what I do, which is the crossroads of food and social media, specifically with restaurants. So I'm pretty stoked about that.
Yeah, it's crazy. We did. We talked for a long time, and I find what you do, I was looking into it, I find what you do very, very, it's interesting because it's a whole new world that we live in now, especially as chefs, as restaurateurs, as caterers. It's just a different world than it was even, I've been doing this for 20 years now, and it's amazing how much it's changed and just, I mean, God, the past, I mean, what, 3-4 years, it's completely different than, don't you think?
Completely. I would even go so far as to say maybe 2.5, 3 years. The way that chefs, restaurants, that anybody who's working in food is presenting themselves is completely different. It's social media. It's the new media. Traditional PR is
crazy.
You know, sad to say, it's out the door. It's out the door.
Well, you have companies who they work specifically, especially, all right, so maybe not everywhere across the country, but, you know, in big cities like, you know, of course, New York City, Los Angeles, San Francisco, even places like Seattle, some of those secondary cities. I mean that in a nice way, not secondary, like not as good. Because Seattle's beautiful. Don't get me wrong. I love it. But you know what I'm saying? Like, they have, you know, they're a hospitality PR firm. That's what they do. But you're finding that, you know, now, I mean, what they do is more social media based, and it just seems kind of silly to even hire some crazy big hospitality firm who's going to, you know, old school, I guess, send out press releases. They're going to try to, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me when, you know, for instance, I had someone working for me for a long time, and, you know, they would do a couple things here and there, but in the end, if I tweeted about it, I'm talking to more people than they ever would.
That's right. I mean, you can pretty much say that social media, particularly Instagram in particular, for restaurants and anyone who's working in food, is your own personal PR agent. If you get enough engagement and get enough followers, you don't need anything else but a single social media platform to take you to the next level. And what restaurants are really finding is moving that needle are social media platforms, particularly Instagram. It's a shame that the algorithm has changed where getting an organic following is harder than ever. You know, Facebook owns Instagram.
It's
now
amazing.
A pay-to-play platform, but it's still the number one platform for making a name for yourself. If you really don't have, let's say, $8,000 in the bank every month to pay a traditional PR firm.
Right, right. And it's amazing how you can build. So it's no secret that I'm a big True Cook supporter. I'm friends with Chad, who started the whole company. The first interview he ever did was here with me on this very program. And his entire company is built off of social media. This is a worldwide thing. It's amazing how many people are down with this. And the entire company is built solely off of Instagram. And it's crazy to see how that works these days.
Yeah, it's really wild. There have been some, really, I mean, almost like rags to riches type stories just from Instagram alone. And one of them in particular being a little burger joint, not so little now, in Soho, New York City, where I'm based. It's called Black Tap. And I don't know if any listeners out there have been to Black Tap. They sell a pretty good burger. But if you came to see Black Tap now, you wouldn't even know they sell burgers because they've got a line around the block for these gigantic milkshakes that are brimming with pretzels and cookies. You know,
unbelievable
marshmallows, like check them out. They're really insane, and they had a really great social media strategy, which was to get a lot of what I call food Instagrammers, food influencers, into their doors, take some shots with their burgers, take some shots with their milkshakes, and blow it up over social media. Until, in particular, this gigantic milkshake that was blown up over social media went viral, and then it was game over from there. Literally overnight, they went from, maybe a couple thousand followers to now they're topping 170,000 followers.
That's crazy.
And it's like the new Dominique Ansel line, you know?
Dominique Ansel
had, he was sensational for the cronut. You know, Black Tap is now sensational for these gigantic milkshakes. They've even taken off over in London. They're so popular.
Wow.
And that was through social media. That was through social media.
It's amazing to see how that much can make a difference. So what would be, you're gonna like, this is what you do. So I'm not trying to get you to give away your gimmick of what you do for a living for people and how you help people. But like, so there's a small restaurant in let's say Myrtle Beach, South Carolina or something like that. And they're trying to grow their following and make things happen. What's the best, like, what would be the number one thing you would tell them? Like, would they follow certain hashtags or how would they end up growing that to make themselves be noticed more on social media?
That's one of them too. So before I dive into that, I'll give you a little bit about like who I am and what I do.
Wait a minute, are you driving the car or am I driving the car? What the hell?
Well, I gotta let them know who the expert is before I, you know, set them on the trip for the trade. I do restaurant social media, working particularly with restaurant groups and food-based brands in New York City. And then we'll get into a little bit later the other pieces of culinary-related work that I do. But in regards to social media, it's managing restaurant accounts and really seeing what are the types of content and strategies, best practices that make them grow. And you're right. One of those are hashtags. You know, it's taking a look at what are the hashtags that are really going to get the most eyes on my post. If I'm a little place in Myrtle Beach, you know, I'm selling, you know, pot pies, but I really want my place that's selling my pot pies to be the biggest growing, you know, lines out the door. How am I going to do that? I can't pay for a PR firm. Let's take to social media. First things first, let's get all the hashtags that are related with my place, with my brand, and apply them to every single piece of content that I use. And it's really important to do that because that's how people discover who you are without even knowing you.
Right.
And then the second piece, I would say, you really do have to have good content. And good content can mean a variety of things to many different people. But across the board, you take a beautiful, appealing photo of the food that makes you say, damn, I want to eat that. I want to buy that. Where is this place? How do I go find it? Because content, especially on social media, are really the new food reviews. They're the new Minis of Gods. They're the new, you know, Michelin reviews. You know, I think the days of these very formal boards giving away stars or giving away thumbs up is almost dying. I hesitate to say that because it is really, really important among folks that work in the industry, but to the masses, it's what's going to be on social media. So having good content that resonates with your audience is key, and it's going to take some testing to figure out, well, what is good content? Like, who is my audience? That's another piece that you
sure
have to figure out. And some of it's through A/B testing. You know, your audience of pot pies could be, you know, if we were chatting, a bunch of women at a Tupperware circle, or it could be, you know, kids after school wanting some nice home-cooked meal
right
that maybe their moms aren't doing right now. You got to figure that out.
You're so right about that, and I just want to touch back on you were talking about the food reviewers and things like that and giving out stars,
yeah,
and whatnot. And listen, I worked at a Fire Diamond 5-star AAA mobile-rated hotel with a Michelin star. Like, I did that, but I've gotten more attention for some of the stuff I've done on Instagram, Twitter, social media than I ever did for any of that. It's amazing how that happened and how it's changed the way that you – it changed the way you get noticed. It's really, really something else.
Absolutely.
And so what made you decide
–
you've always – you know, you kind of – food's always been one of your favorite things, but how did you get into doing this sort of stuff? Because you actually were looking at any way you could to get in the food business, right?
Yeah, that's right, and it's kind of a funny story how I got into food, especially as it relates to branding and social media. In a past life, I used to be a web analyst, which sounds boring as hell, but...
Wait, you were one of the people who read, like, the spider web in Charlotte's Web? Okay, that was terrible. I'm sorry. I take that back. That was horrendous. I stole 10 seconds of your life there, and I'm sorry.
No, that was really cute. It got me a good laugh.
I feel bad about it.
I feel bad saying I was a web analyst because it sounds boring as hell, but I studied web traffic data. And what I would do day in and day out was, you know, try to figure out what I could do on a website to make more people either stay on the website or go to a particular section of the website and get them to, let's say, buy a product or reach a goal. Company I was with kind of just pushed their social media on me in that realm of marketing. But then it turned out I happened to be really, really good at growing their Facebook and their Twitter to thousands upon thousands. Always loved food, always loved social media in that sense. And it really came together when I was a baker. So for a hot second, I baked for this hotel down in Soho. I would bake granola for their breakfast service. And I would be baking all day in my kitchen, schlepping 20 pounds of granola down through the East Village, getting to Soho, hoping the birds didn't pick at it. And as I, for real, this was my goal. This was my carb cocaine, you know, because if any of it dropped, then, you know, that's money I'm losing.
That's money on the ground, absolutely.
Yeah, it's money on the ground.
And listen, so we all know what happens when you do cocaine and you think you spilled some on the ground. We spend all night trying to search for it in the carpet.
Yeah, that's right. I had to pick up every little last grain of granola.
Honestly, no one ever gets coke to save for later. That just doesn't happen. Sorry.
Sorry.
Yeah, listen, I'm not judging. I'm just, I mean, listen, maybe we got experience. Maybe we don't. I don't know.
No, I hear you. That's money. That's just money.
It's money. It is money.
So I was baking. I was baking and, you know, from baking and simultaneously, I was also food writing for several publications.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people would ask me what my day job was, I would tell them what my day job was, bore them to tears. But the part about social media really perked them up, and the fact that I was able to grow this company's social media really quickly and pretty much on a dime, it got them, you know, the friends that I had in the restaurant business, restaurateurs that I knew, chefs that I knew, it got them really interested in asking, hey, Marisol, like, you know something about the food industry, you're kind of cool, and you seem to have done a good job, you know, in this realm of social media, do you mind taking over mine and seeing what happens? So that was kind of the crux of how I got into social media as relates to food. And it's worked out really well so far. You know, it's really become something that is so sought after that, you know, you can't ignore it anymore. Before, companies were able to say, like, you know what, I'm going to ignore my social media strategy or get some college intern to do it. You know, the days of that are over. You know, you have to get an expert, a professional, if you really want to take your brand to the next level. Because if you go on a restaurant's social media platform, be it Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and they've got low numbers, you kind of think as a consumer in the back of your mind, why? What's wrong
completely
with this place? What's
completely, you're absolutely right. And what do you think? What do you think that number is that changes? That whole mindset changes. Do you think it's a number? Do you think it's a certain amount of posts? Like, what do you think?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's totally a number. And that number, you know, on the lower end of the spectrum is 10K. Once you get that little K behind your Instagram following, behind your Twitter following, once you get that, you know, period, it's, you know, you're golden because, you know, you just keep growing from there. People respond to the fact that there is, you know, a really large whole thousand number. And I can tell you personally from, you know, my own Instagram, at BreadButterNYC, also on Snapchat, at me, you guys. I can tell
Look at you. Nicely done. Nicely done.
I can tell you from, you know, a single individual standpoint, you know, when I reached 10K, it was really a turning point in my own personal branding, having, you know, tons of PR companies reach out to me, restaurants wanting to collaborate with me, and God only knows the psychology behind it, but, you know, that is that's an industry standard, be it for a person or for a restaurant.
Completely.
It's really hard to reach 10K.
Yes. It is, and I've had my Instagram for just a short while now, and we're building, we're getting there, and, you know, I don't have nearly your following at all, but what's amazing is that the following you do have, I mean, first of all, when you get a following on social media, to have them notice what you're doing is one thing. you know, to mm-hmm. actually have them comment and like and stuff. I mean, your pictures constantly get hundreds of likes. I mean, that's an amazing thing to get. Even if you have thousands of followers, they're not all going to like every single picture.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's something that a lot of people, and also, you know, let's say PR agencies or anyone you're trying to work with, takes a look at. Not only the number that you have at the top of your profile, but also how are consumers, how are future patrons interacting with your content? And that's something that as a restaurant, if I'm, you know, selling my pot pies in Myrtle Beach, you know, that's something that I have to take into consideration too.
Right.
Because
right.
we don't know how many views you're getting unless you are using a paid campaign on Facebook or Twitter. Right. But if you don't have any money, you don't have access to that information.
Absolutely.
And the only information you have access to is what you see on the comments, likes, follows, shares.
And that's a good question. You know, it leads into a question for me. And yeah, that's me. I just retweeted you. but that, you know, so you look at these things like Facebook. Like, I held off on Facebook. I'm new to Facebook, believe it or not. I've only been on there for a few months. My agent, PR person, made me do it. She actually built the page, and she's running it. But now I'm kind of starting to have fun with it, you know, because the people you connect with and reconnect with and whatnot. But for me, you know, you look at Facebook, and you can do these, you know, campaigns where you pay advertising, all that shit. Is it worth it? Does it work?
In my honest opinion, yes and no. Before Facebook,
I'm glad you understand. I'm glad you
because there's two sides to it. Before Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter became pay-to-play advertisement platforms, you could grow a following organically by the sheer amount of work you put into it. You post content consistently, you interact with following, you were going to grow. But as soon as it changed, their algorithm changed, and it was much harder to get an organic following. You have to start paying to get the same number of reach that you normally would have without, you know, having a separate paid social media marketing budget. And it's really unfortunate because a lot of people are asking, well, what's the next social media platform that I need to get on? What's the next big thing? A lot of people are saying it's
Google
Snapchat.
Plus.
But Snapchat is, oh, my God. Oh, come on.
I'm kidding.
That LinkedIn is going to be the biggest thing for restaurants.
And look, I just, you know, like, I'm bringing MySpace back. You're in my top 10 friends right now. Just want you to know that.
Was I even alive? Oh, my gosh.
Well, listen, it's funny, actually, just to not to change the course, but, like, MySpace now is doing a thing called MySpace Interviews, and it's hysterical because you go on Twitter, and the Twitter account is at MySpace on Twitter for MySpace. I just think it's hysterical.
Oh, my God.
It's like, go at MySpace on Twitter to find out where these interviews are on MySpace. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense, but it's very funny.
I'm going to have to check those out. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. It doesn't even make any sense. You try to explain to somebody.
I'm going to have to check this out. Oh, my goodness.
So
a lot of brands are looking for, like, what's the next platform? Was it Vine? Was it Meerkat? Was it Periscope? And, you know, the big winner of what's the next social media platform is now Snapchat. And brands are scrambling to get themselves together and asking themselves, well, how do we utilize Snapchat now that, you know, for better or for worse, Instagram is on the way out?
Yeah. Well, Snapchat doesn't make any sense to me because, listen, I know I'm old. I got it. I'm with that. I know. I just found Apple Music like 2 weeks ago. I got it. but what I don't understand with Snapchat is if I can text you. Like, why would I just send you a message that is going to disappear? I don't get it. Like, why would that? This isn't making sense to me. Am I just not there, or what's the story?
You know what? I used to be. I'm a Snapchat converted. I started my own Snapchat about 3 weeks ago. And it mostly has to do with laundry. I do a lot of laundry, so you'll see a lot of me lying under it on my Snapchat. What? And then everything that I eat, whether you like it or not. And what's really interesting about Snapchat is you can snap anything. And it is like, why wouldn't I just text somebody?
Right.
And the reason behind that is you can build a visual story. Snapchat's totally not paying me to say this. I really wish they would endorse me and promote me, but they're not.
This
you
segment
can build
brought
a visual...
to you by Snapchat.
You can build a visual story. You know, oh, I snapped myself under a laundry, you know, pile of laundry here, and then, you know, I took a shitty picture of what I'm about to eat for dinner that no one really cares about, and then I snapped myself walking to yoga. But then whoever sees your snap sees me under a pile of laundry, my shitty dinner, and then they see me walking to yoga.
She has a great life. Almost... I can't wait to hang out with this girl. She's fantastic. She does nothing. Her life sucks, and she does yoga. Like, you sound like so much fun.
Yoga is cheaper than therapy, which is why I go about 4 times a week.
Nice, nice. Well, it's funny because I've never done a Snapchat thing.
Oh, pardon. Go ahead, Chef.
Well, I've never done the Snapchat thing. But you, as being doing what you do, I've always heard that whatever new social media comes out, go immediately and get your name in it, even if you don't use it. Is that a smart thing to do?
And that's exactly what I did. I had no intentions of using Snapchat, but I immediately went out and got @BreadButterNYC, add me on Snapchat, you guys. And, you know, when I decided to start utilizing the platform, I was really glad that I did, because now I can call it my own and build it and grow it. And one of the things that's really refreshing about Snapchat in terms of personal social media, but also restaurant social media or any type of brand social media, is that you don't have to take such painstaking time to create your content. The level of content that you create on Snapchat is understood to be maybe not as beautiful as what you would see on Instagram, maybe not as graphics heavy as what you would see on Facebook, less promo than Twitter. And it's in real time, you know. You can snap anything, and the expectation is, so long as it's lighthearted and funny and engaging, you're going to see a good return. But brands still don't know how to utilize it because you don't have a lot of metrics that you can view. And
right,
because
that
it's gone in 20, yeah.
I mean, how can you tell?
Really,
how can you measure
brand.
It? How can you measure it?
There's only one way right now that brands can actually measure their growth and engagement on Snapchat, and that's if you purchase a filter. It's called a geo filter. So when you're snapping, and as you will learn, Chef, we should have your PR person make Chef_Plum or Chef Plum. Love food right now on Snapchat. But when you're on Snapchat and you can swipe to add a filter to any image that you snap and it goes live to the public, it's almost like a little personal branding for your snap. What brands have been able to do, because Snapchat has allowed small to mid-sized businesses, is to purchase their own personal filter for Snapchat. So maybe, let's say, like $20 to start, run it for a certain amount of time. So if you're, let's say, you're your favorite restaurant. One of my favorite restaurants in the city is Zizi Limona.
Okay.
You know, Zizi Limona's on Snapchat, and they create their own personal Snapchat geo filter. They can run it for the course of the evening. Anyone who's in their restaurant that takes a snap adds their filter, boom, now it's personalized as a Zizi Limona snap. Zizi Limona can later go onto Snapchat, having purchased this filter, see how many people viewed it, and how many people use it. But that's the only thing that brands can measure.
Wow. It just seems too difficult. Like, too, I don't know. It's insane. Like, to me, Snapchat is used for sending dick pics. Like, that's what I thought it was about. Like, I thought
that's
what it
was.
Wait, did
it? It's dick pics and laundry.
It seems like it's laundry, yoga, bad food, and dick pics. It's a lot of fun. Restaurants use it all the time, which, trust me, after working in kitchens for 20 years, doesn't surprise me a bit. You have no idea the pictures I've seen. So I come from a bit of a different mentality with this stuff. So I come from the world of doing you know, Food Network type shows and shows of that nature. And, you know, my first show that I did was called The Taste. I'm getting to a point. Hang with me. Bear with me. I'm going to feed you, baby bird. Don't worry. So
okay.
I did a show called The Taste. After The Taste, my following on Twitter specifically kind of dramatically jumped, and I was only briefly on there for a very small amount of time. And then as you progressively do more and more stuff, it's amazing how many people look you up and find you on that. and having, you know, even my Twitter follower, it's not huge. I mean, it's just under 10,000. I don't have the dot yet. I'm working on it. But having that, it's amazing how many opportunities that can bring you just by having it, and how much it almost legitimizes you in the eyes of sponsors and things of that nature. Do you see that so much more happening now with things like Instagram or, I mean, Snapchat we just spoke about, but even Facebook, does it still matter?
This is what I tell a lot of the brands, restaurants, anyone that I work with. You know, Instagram in this day and age is and should be the primary social media marketing platform, with Facebook and Twitter being secondary.
Okay.
And the reason being is, you know, it's almost more expectation than publication. People expect that you have a Facebook or Twitter, no matter how big or small it is, bigger being better. But they still expect you to have it, you know.
Really?
Your
really?
Brand, you need, yeah.
Bias queens on this fucking program. Anyway, go ahead.
Bigger is better. Expectation to have Facebook and Twitter. Instagram being the primary platform to actually get people engaging with your brand.
Right.
And one of the interesting things about that is everyone's kind of confused right now. Like, nobody really knows what to do with themselves, because it seems that social media has really reached a tipping point of getting followers organically. So a lot, and, you know, paying for them. And so what a lot of people such as myself, as well as, you know, owners of restaurants, if they don't have their own PR company or a social media consultant to help them out, have really taken to these food Instagrammers and these food influencers that I referenced earlier.
Sure.
That seems to be what is going to move that needle. So you have, you know, they're not even, I mean, tangentially related to the food industry, but they're people who have gone out, taken photos, tons and tons of photos of the food that they eat. It's cheesy, it's ooey, it's gooey, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Food in the air, food, you know, that's dripping off the table. And they have hundreds and thousands of followers, so they are getting bombarded by restaurants to come in and eat with them on the house in exchange for a photo, so they can reach their hundreds and thousands of followers. You know, and they're almost like mini food celebrities, you know, in some social circles. And that's really been part of the number one outreach that PR agencies and restaurants have been utilizing to get more foot traffic in through the door. And it's just a really wild world. I'm sure you've been out and you've seen, let's say, people standing on chairs to take a photo of their food, or, you know, getting out these massive cameras or flashlights and shining them on food and taking a billion photos of them. Food's getting cold. People are hangry. But, you know, it's now turned into this almost bona fide profession and an almost necessary, I don't want to say, maybe not a necessity, but, you know, it's a huge strategy. It's a very big marketing strategy, and these influencers are really valuable to growing a restaurant's social media. Does that translate into actual sales? Nobody really knows, because you can't track that.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, unless you're like, hey, come in and, you know, use promo code, whatever, you know, if you can get that guy to say that. So this is my issue with all that stuff. This is just me as a 20-year in this business chef. I've been doing this for a long fucking time, all but on the East Coast. And, you know, I've trained under – I worked with Sean Brock for a long time. I worked with Lonnie Hewat for a long time. I've worked and trained with some really, really amazing chefs in this day and age. And then to take all – and I think of myself as I'm pretty good at what I do. And I can go and I can have a successful, let's just put a restaurant scenario, and I have a successful restaurant, we're killing it, we're kicking ass. Now all of a sudden some 22-year-old kid can come in here and take a picture of something because he doesn't like it, and that can affect me, even though whatever this 22-year-old piece of fucking dog shit thinks he knows couldn't fit in my pinky. Like, now he can affect how much, you know, what we're doing because he took a picture of my food and he didn't like it. You know, or maybe he's like, I didn't know that this had, you know, a root beer reduction or whatever, because I didn't know what reduction meant. You know, that's what that bothers me. Like, I feel like it's a weird time to be in the business, and I haven't had anything like that happen yet, but it bothers me because you have chefs who have trained their entire lives and, you know, one picture from someone who, you know, is a kid could just destroy their entire career.
And it's really powerful stuff. And I think that's something, the way I think about it, in a perfect world, it would be tradition respects modernity, but modernity doesn't fear tradition, if that makes any sense.
Right.
And for better or for worse, what restaurants are now catering to are changing the look and feel of not only their spaces, their interior design, but also their menus to be more what we call Instagram friendly. You know, there are specific items on menu created solely for the purposes of social media. There are interiors created solely for the purpose of, hey, I think this wall would look really great on social media to get more people in the door and take a photo here. And that, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, if you look at it from two perspectives, it's like, yeah, I'm getting more people into my restaurant to try my food. And then on the other hand, you could look at it like, what am I doing to get people in through my doors? Like, why, like, what is it that I'm doing? Why isn't that enough?
You know, it's really unfortunate. And this is, here's an example that just bothers me so much. Ready? So, my buddy Chris Santos and my buddy Derek Prince, Santos opened his new restaurant Vandal down in Brooklyn, right? We got to go to friends and family. It was a lot of fun, great time. I mean, this is day two of the restaurant, not open to the public. You know, it's just friends and family coming in, right, and hanging out and trying the food. Mm-hmm. They were testing things and whatnot. And someone posts a picture, and it's friends and family night. Like, it's no one's paying for anything. We're here to test. They're test running the kitchen, and they get beat up about it. And that just drives me crazy. I don't understand it. Like, just because you can take a picture doesn't mean you should, you know? I don't know.
I completely agree. And one of the things that this is going to sound like such a schoolyard thing to say is that, you know, I'm going to say, if you don't have anything good to say, don't say it. If you don't have anything
right.
good to post, don't post it, because going back to your example, like, hey, I'm 22 years old and straight out of college, I have thousands of followers, but what do I actually know about the food industry? You know, if you're not going to help build somebody up, why bother to take the time to break them down? If you don't understand what's going on your plate, if you're doing it literally just for the gram, you know, it's really unfair to try to play God, because you really can destroy someone's career. I mean, like, that used to happen with Michelin stars, you know? People would lose stars, and it could destroy their careers. And, you know, I think these things are, you know, we should never play lightly with writing a bad review or defaming someone just because we can. Because that also changes the entire perspective of who's writing the bad review. If you're going to write a bad review or post something negative about someone, all eyes are immediately going to be on you. And, you know, people are going to ask, well, what are your credentials? What do you know about it? Why did you do that? You know, it's for the same reason that people, you know, have this inherent distrust of Yelp. You know, people are only running to Yelp to write negative things.
That's where I was going next, actually. The whole thing, you're right. And Yelp to me has become... it's almost a joke now. Does it really matter? Like, no one gives a fuck about Yelp anymore, you know?
Yeah, I personally don't personally use it. I know a lot of people that don't use it. There's, I think, a lot of more highly curated sources of information for food and dining that you could go to other than Yelp.
Right. You know,
For me personally, I work in social media, and I work in social media restaurant branding. Like, my... you know, part of my business is to, you know, make my clients look good and engage with our following, get people in through the doors in a real way. You know, and a lot of that involves food photography and strategizing really, you know, the best times to post, how to effectively engage with our community, et cetera. But aside from, you know, working in social media, you know, tangentially other work that I do, which is working very closely with restaurants and chefs, I typically ask my friends that work in the food industry where to go and what to eat, because it's not only who you follow on social media and how large they're following it, but their credibility, their reputation. I think that's something we can, you know, all take into consideration. You know, who's the first person, you know, that pops into your mind, chef, when you're like, I need a restaurant recommendation. Like, who's your go-to?
For me, it depends on where I'm at, to be honest with you. Here locally where I live in Fairfield County, we have two very, very reputable large food blogs that do a great job, who I'm very friendly with, who, if I need to, I mean, Omnom CT, they're amazing, Dan and Christian. I can send them a message or text them, and they'll send me something where I am and say, you got to check these guys out. They're great. And that helps, because that's what they do for a living. It's a great thing to do. And normally they're right. They've never missed with me. So, I mean, that's probably, it just depends on where I'm at. If I'm in the city, you know, it depends on, it really does depend, because I may just call one of my chef buddies and say, hey, man, where should I go tonight? And they will tell me. You know, it just really depends on, if I'm in Los Angeles, I'll call my buddy Kyle Schutte. He's a chef out there. Hey, dude, where should I go eat tonight? You know, in Chicago, I'll call, it just depends on where you are, you know?
Exactly. And, yeah, I'm the same way. But for a lot of, and this is where social media is really important, for a lot of people, they don't have chef friends the way you or I might have, be able to call upon a buddy that's a chef, or be able to call upon a food writer or a food editor. So for those types of people who don't have a direct culinary connection, you know, social media really is their guiding star to help them figure out, what should I eat? Where should I go tonight?
Yeah, because anybody can do that. You're right.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And it makes it really accessible. And, you know, at the end of the day, we do want to feel some type of, you know, to be approachable. You know, we want the food that we're going to eat to be approachable, and it's very approachable on social media.
And connected. I think connected is very, very important. I think this day and age, especially with social media and things like that, people feel way more connected to food than they ever have in their lives. They ever have in any day and age it's ever been. We're more connected and more in tune with food than we ever have been.
I try to keep my own personal posting, you know, to a minimum, which is why I've taken to Snapchat, so you can see, you know, a little bit more of my real life.
Yoga, we got it.
My laundry, my nasty smoothies that I make in the morning.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, it's really powerful, because you're able to share and you're able to connect. And from a restaurant standpoint, that is really value. It's putting yourself out there. If you're looking for a social media strategy to get people to come into your restaurant, you know, you do have to take it from a very approachable angle and make sure that you do have good content, that you are engaging with your following, you are checking out the best times to post and using the proper hashtags. Otherwise, you know, if you're gonna have social media platforms, you better be using them. If you don't put in the time and effort, just delete the accounts, because it doesn't even matter.
Right, completely. And so it's funny, like, I've written down like 9 questions for you. And obviously, I can't ask you all 9 of these questions. I'll keep you here all night long. I have so many questions, but we've kind of talked about the negative side of it. You know, with what can happen with the social media and stuff like that, with chefs and with pictures and whatnot. But there's also a giant upside to it as well. You know, if you're having a dinner or a restaurant and someone, even of your caliber, comes in and, you know, and posts a picture or takes a picture of it, all of a sudden now that place can be on the map.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's amazing how much of a difference that can make.
It can really make a difference. I mean, one of the things that I was very fortunate enough to partake in just this past weekend was the opening of Babu G's Brunch. Babu G's is this incredible, amazing Indian restaurant in the East Village. It's one of the hottest restaurants around. And I had the good fortune of working with Jesse Singh, their chef there, on an event the week before where he gave us a bit of a preview into the brunch menu.
Yeah.
I was sitting there with my boyfriend. Another guy came in to dine with us, and we were literally us three the only ones in this restaurant, you know, eating this amazing, incredible Indian breakfast food. And we took several photos, posted them on social media, and it blew people coming in through the door saying, like, hey, I just saw this photo of the salmon lox with naan on social media. Like, are you guys serving brunch?
Wow. And
it was incredible. It was incredible how quickly the turnaround happened.
That's crazy.
It was insane. Within, you know, a couple hours of posting, you know, people walking in through the door and be like, hey, I saw this on Instagram. Not that Wabuji needs any help whatsoever there. Like, one of the most incredible restaurants I've had the good fortune of being at, eating, you know, working with their chef. But that small example just goes to show how quickly social media can move.
It's crazy how much that's crazy. They were coming in just because they saw the picture. I mean, like, in the time period, just that's nuts. Check out, you guys. You can follow my friend Marisol. You can follow. She's really easy to follow on Instagram, at BreadButterNYC. Of course, Snapchat if you're interested in seeing yoga pictures and whatnot. That's BreadButterNYC. And Twitter. Do you even care about Twitter anymore, or do you don't even give a shit about Twitter?
Nah, you can still follow me. It's just my name, you guys. Marisol Salazar.
But you don't care, like, you don't really do shit on Twitter, like, it's not your thing, right?
I'm starting to tweet a little bit. My Snapchat game is strong, though.
My Snapchat game is strong. You know, it's funny, Twitter is one of those only, it's crazy to me that, you know, I don't watch news. I've really sworn off it because I just hate all the negativity and all that crap. That's all it is. But it's ridiculous to me now that news people, quote, news people and news organizations, they fucking quote Twitter. Are you kidding me? Like, that's the biggest joke I've ever seen in my life. Seriously, like, I don't get it. And but it's the one social media thing that is, like, recognized, you know, kind of broad stroke everywhere. You know, I mean, I think Twitter is kind of relevant.
Twitter is really important. I think maybe I'm just not on it so much because I'm Hispanic. I'm originally from Panama, and
right.
I can talk about the leg of a chair for hours. So for me to fit a conversation into 140 characters is completely killer.
Right.
I need to learn to be more concise. It's the moral of the story.
I wasn't sure where you were going. I was like, I'm waiting for this. Like, you know, I'm Hispanic. We don't tweet. It's just something we just don't do. That's not in my culture. We don't. I was like, where is she going with that? That's crazy.
Let me give you the condensed version. I'm Hispanic. I don't tweet.
That's hysterical. So I honestly, I have like 9 more questions for you, but it's getting late, and I don't want to keep you on here too long because I'm drinking my naughty seltzers because I'm watching my girlish figure right now. trying to get my bikini body back. There's so much I could tell you, Marisol. You have no idea. Like, I used to be a pro wrestler. It's a long story. Anyway. Yeah. But I want to ask you about the Breakfast Club because you were telling me a little bit about this, and it's very, very intriguing how it brings people together in the industry that maybe wouldn't have the chance to be together, such as like food editors and bloggers and chefs, and how it kind of brings everybody together. How do we get involved in this? How do we get invited to it? How does it happen?
So Breakfast Club is a series that was started by my colleague, who's one of the most incredibly creative people that I know. Her name's Emily Miller. She's the creator and founder of Trends on Trends. And we're working on this series that she began called The Breakfast Club, and it brings creative chefs, editors, and influencers together in the morning over amazing food and great coffee. Coincidentally, we just finished our 15th Breakfast Club last week at the White Hotel with Jesse Singh from Babuji. Jesse and his executive chef, Derek, were so wonderful and created this amazing one-of-a-kind breakfast menu for our event. And in essence, it's a creative coming together of the minds where people that are experts and leaders in the food industry can come together, catch up. Maybe you haven't seen each other in a while because you're in Germany and, you know, I just flew to LA to work on a restaurant opening, but we can come together at the Breakfast Club and just catch up or collaborate on a new idea or meet someone new that you've been wanting to meet. So it's a really wonderful way for people that work in the food industry to come together and to really chat, you know. It's a really nice creative collaboration. And we've been fortunate enough, you know, I mentioned earlier before, to have some wonderful people come to these breakfast clubs, like Daniel Krieger and Nicole Franzen, you know, editors from across different food publications. It's really just gone beyond New York City. We worked in Seattle with Renee Erickson of The Whale Winds on a breakfast club. You know, my colleague Emily was just in Portugal doing one with the food creators out there. Yeah, it's almost like the modern day power breakfast, but instead of businessmen, they're really, really cool people who love food.
It sounds amazing. It sounds like a lot of fun to be at an event like that and just see these people and just, I mean, anything when you start involving food people, to me, I mean, you're talking salt of the earth. You're talking, especially in this day and age. You know, I joke on this program and with especially in my generation of cooks, man, we're a broken band of pirates. Like, none of us asked to be in this business. We just are. It just kind of happened. And, you know, but you'll find that these are really just people who are hardworking, people who have worked their ass off to be here and get where they are. And I can imagine that the conversations are probably really, really just deep and fun, and then sometimes not so deep, just a bunch of dick jokes.
Yeah, I mean, most of it has to do with, like, shit, I need a cup of coffee, but it's going to be this amazing cup of coffee from, let's say, Stumptown's, and like, yeah, I really can't wait to sit down and eat, you know, two chefs that actually used to be based in Brooklyn, now in L.A., Sarah Heimerson and Sarah Kramer, Shashuka from Mad Capra. You know, I can't wait to catch up with, you know, an editor that I've been meaning to chat with, you know, from this publication. It's something that you look forward to, especially because it's not coming from necessarily a PR angle. It's really coming from this, like, creative force that Breakfast Club creates over food. It's a really wonderful experience, and we've been fortunate enough for it to be really successful and just to have wonderful, amazing people come in. When I hear someone, you know, a chef such as yourself saying, like, you know, it's really great for those people who are really salt of the earth, it makes everything that we do just so much more meaningful.
Which is, it sounds like so much fun. It's amazing. And hopefully you guys keep doing it and you can do it in different places as well. You know, I mean, Portugal sounds awesome too. Maybe next time you do one in Portugal, just give me the invite. Like, I'll, you know, we could figure that out. I don't know. What about, like, New Zealand? That would be awesome. Like, New Zealand, great wine.
Okay, well, we actually did one in Scotland, believe it or not. So the next time you're out. Pardon?
Pretty far from New Zealand, right?
Yeah, pretty far from New Zealand, but, like, outside of the country.
Well, it sounds awesome. And again, you guys, you can follow her on Instagram at BreadButterNYC. I highly recommend that. And Marisol, I got to tell you, I'm not sure how often you leave the city, but I have an event coming up that I haven't announced yet that you got to come check out. What I do is my pop-up dinners, and, you know, I'm not going to put myself over too much, but I'm the only chef in the country who's ever done one inside of Williams-Sonoma, and a lot of cool things we've done. This one we're going to do at a place that our Edible Nutmeg on the Road series was at, and it's going to be amazing. And I know there's great food in New York City, and I love it. I enjoy it myself, but trust me, this is going to be a place where you actually watch me pull your lobster out of the water and serve it to you.
What?
Yeah, it's going to be badass. You got to come and check it out. I'll send you the info if you actually think you'd do it.
No, I'm down. I'm down.
It's easy. It's a train ride, and you'd pop it off the train. Piece of cake. Nothing to it.
Well, I mean, you already baited me with tacos and ribs, so lobster also does the trick.
Those are
so good.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what's up. I get so weird about food. So check it out. You've been so much fun to talk to. I'd love to actually do a part two with you at some point, maybe even have another chef on here to talk with you. Because I literally have 8 more questions for you at least, but we're just, it's, we're going to be here till 2 in the morning if I keep running my mouth. And I would do it. You don't want me to do that. But I want to give you my quick feed right here to finish it off and just kind of it helps people get to know you a little bit more. So if you don't mind, I got 3 more questions for you that you're going to answer very quickly.
For sure. Do it.
All right. Here we go. So what was the food that you had that made you realize food's a real thing? It's not just something we eat because we have to. Food's amazing, and food can be so touching and emotional, and it can affect us so much. Has there been that dish you've had that you ate it and you're like, oh my God, this is crazy?
Yes, chef, yes.
It was my ribs last Saturday night. Thank you. Next question. I'm just kidding.
it was an anchovy stuffed olive that I ate while I was studying in Madrid that day.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember the exact moment. It was literally an orgasm in my mouth. I had never tasted anything like it, and I knew that if food could do this to me, literally shake my world and have such a physical and profound impact on me, like I had to be a part of it somehow. It was an itty-bitty olive.
That's crazy. That's an insane thing to have. That's great. I love that story. That's fantastic. So cocktails, same thing. Like to me, they kind of go hand in hand, whether it's wine, whether it's a beautiful cocktail or even a great beer. I love cocktails. I love drinks. I think it goes hand in hand with food. I'm on a rosé kick right now, and I'm drinking a spiked seltzer. So yeah, I'm actually wearing an apron and pasties as we talk. It's hysterical. I'm not even a man. not there's anything wrong with that, but that's just what I am, and I'm 6'3", 250 pounds. Anyway, so has there been a cocktail that's affected you the same way? You're like, wow, this is awesome. I'm not just drinking malt liquor to get drunk. I'm drinking because it tastes amazing. It goes well with my food.
Yeah, most of the time my motto is get drunk, not fat. My go-to drink, anyone that knows me knows that it is tequila. It is a dark añejo tequila.
Yeah.
And then sometimes mezcal on ice. That is always my go-to.
Well, you're a New York girl right now. Of course you're drinking mezcal. That's what it's, of course.
It's in right now. Mezcal is very, very in.
Completely.
There's a bar in Alphabet City, East Village, called Death & Company that makes a great cocktail from mezcal. I don't know if it's still on their menu, but it's called String a Bell. And if anyone's watched The Wire, you know who String a Bell is and why
right.
It's so amazing and why this cocktail is amazing.
I mean, it's so funny. You know what we called mezcal 15 years ago?
What?
Cheap tequila. Because that's what it is. It's tequila that's actually not made in the right area. Am I right?
Mezcal? Yeah. It's almost like smoky gasoline, but I love it.
Well, right. It's smoked. They smoked the agave for it. But, like, it's kind of like champagne versus sparkling white wine. Like, sparkling white wine is technically, champagne. It's just not made in champagne or made method champenois. Same thing with tequila and mezcal. Right. It's the same fucking gimmick. Anyway. yeah, I'm not shitting on mezcal. I think it's delicious too. I just think it's hysterical.
It does the trick, which is why I love it.
It does, but for the price of one shot of mezcal, I can buy you an entire case of Old English Fogies from 7-Eleven for $12.
Oh, I dare you. You won't buy me that.
Oh, you don't even. There was a in the day. You don't even know. We would count change. From in Richmond, Virginia, where I live, we would count change from in the fucking couch to go to 7-Eleven to buy a case of Fogies. True story.
Oh,
yep. And we sat on the counter.
You're from Virginia too. What's up? I forgot that.
Yep. Originally from Richmond, Virginia, RVA. Woo woo.
I'm from Nova. What's up?
That's right. That's right. I forgot about that. There you go. that's the connection. See, and occasionally I can hear a little accent in you too. So maybe that's what it was. Now it all makes sense. So the last question, and it's amazing. I tell the story very often, but just it's amazing because this show and the reach of it. I started the show just for fun, and the reach of it's kind of gotten crazy. I had a girl in Korea send me a picture of her cleaning fish while listening to the radio show. It's just insane. It doesn't make any sense to me. I'm like, why? Why are you doing that? But it's because we have so many young cooks and whatnot who check this show out. What would be, you've done very well. I mean, for what you've done, especially, kind of creating your own, you know, niche and getting in there and doing what you do with food. It's very inspiring to hear, for people to hear your story. What would be the biggest piece of advice you would give somebody, a young culinarian, a young entrepreneur, someone coming out who's looking to get into food? Like, what would be the biggest piece of advice you would give them?
It's funny that you asked that question. I had a girl reach out to me.
Funny.
Yeah, no, it's a serious question. Funny coincidence. I had a girl reach out to me last week, you know, asking to meet with me for coffee, and she was wondering the same thing. She really wants to go to culinary school, but was worried about quitting her job and, you know, taking on some debt. But she really loves food, and she really wanted to get into it. She was just scared and didn't know the right way to do it. And I told her, there is no right way to get into food. You can get into it from so many different angles. You can go to culinary school, or you can, you know, work front of house. You can work back of house. You can work at it from a PR angle. You know, I did it a bit differently. I was a really boring web analyst who started food writing and continues to food write on the side. I started baking on the side for about 2.5 years. I just kept meeting more and more restaurateurs and chefs and, you know, gaining that experience in the industry where I was fortunate enough to be able to quit my day job and pursue food as a career full time. You get a lot of people who say, hey, don't quit your day job. Don't listen to them. Like, literally, the moment you figure out that there's something you want to do, do it until it kills you, because you will never get another chance to do it again.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And, you know, one of the new, just right along with what you said right there, just to tag that, you know, one of the newest sayings, I pride myself on inspirational sayings and whatnot, because literally I've had my legs cut out so many times underneath me. But I'm telling you, my guys, these days, struggle and criticism are prerequisites for greatness. Like, you have to pay your dues. That's what it's all about. You have to. And whether it's quitting your day job and doing everything to go to culinary school and making it happen, that's what I did. Or, you know, deciding that you want to be in food and going in and working for free for a chef for 2 weeks to see if they'll even take you on, to pay you $8 an hour to work for them. It's worth it. If that's what you want to do, you got to try it.
It totally is, you know, and I did the same thing, working at least from every angle of food that I could figure out until I found one that fit for me. I worked as a baker. I was a chef's assistant for a period of time. You know, I did food writing, and I explored every single aspect of it until I told myself, if you don't quit your day job now, you're never going to do this, and it's never going to be the job that you want it to be. Easier said than done, so I recommend doing it with a drink in hand.
Absolutely. Listen, Maricel, you've been so much fun to talk to. I really appreciate your time tonight. You can follow her on Instagram, at BreadButterNYC. Snapchat, we've already been over that. I'm not going to make any more jokes. BreadButterNYC. And, of course, Twitter, at Maricel Salazar. And I don't have your Facebook on here, do I? No, I don't. I don't have Facebook.
No. You guys don't want to see my Facebook. It's really not that interesting.
Well, I don't know. You did sell us on the Snapchat thing, so I'm definitely going to make Snapchat now.
Snapchat, for sure.
And the yoga and the bad food and whatever else. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
You really put that over and sold yourself well for that. I like how you do PR. It's great. I'm joking. I appreciate it. And listen, we didn't even get into you, like, your magazine writing and all that stuff, so we definitely need to do a part 2 at some point.
Part 2, part 3.
Well, awesome. We'll do a part 27. We'll just have you on as a co-host from now on. How about that?
Do it. Oh, my God. That'd be so fun.
There you go. Maricel, you're awesome. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time tonight. I look forward to talking to you down the road.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jeff. Have a good one, guys.
I'll talk to you soon. Take care. There she goes, guys. That's my friend Maricel. She's heading on down the road. She's doing well for herself. I found that entire conversation about social media completely enlightening and learning tree moments. I'm going to play a quick 2 seconds of a song, get my stuff together here, and we'll be right back to close the show out. You're checking out Plum Love Foods Live right here on Blog Talk Radio. Be right back, guys.
Yeah, you know what it is. Yellow. Yeah, you know what.
paint. Them niggas scared of it, but them hoes ain't. Soon as I hit the club, look at them hoes' face. Hit the pedal once, make the floor shake. Sway inside, my engine roaring. The big boy, you know what I paid for it. And I got the pedal to the metal. Got you niggas checking game, I'm balling out on every level. Hear them haters talk, but there's nothing you could tell them. Just made a million, got another million on my schedule. No love for them, nigga, break your heart. No keys, push to start. Yeah.
Yeah, coming back live right now, man. Sometimes after an interview, I gotta stand up and stretch the old legs and pop the top on another seltzer. You know, I'm surprised she didn't make fun of me for that, because I would have made fun of me for that. That's all I can do. Big shout out to my friend Marissa for coming on the show tonight. Make sure you follow her at BreadButterNYC, Snapchat BreadButterNYC, and of course on Twitter at Marisol Salazar on them Twitters. What a great show, man. I tell you what, I really found that entire conversation about the social media stuff really, really enlightening. And I'm going to make some changes to my own stuff about that. Looking forward to it, because I think there's a lot to learn from there. Guys, the new episode of Edible Nutmeg on the Road gets released on the 10th this week. We were hanging out at We Charcuterie at Before and After Farms. It's a lot of fun. I hope you guys dig it. We'll talk more about it next week. Truly was a lot of fun. It humbled to have the opportunity. So I hope you guys dig it. Again, appreciate you guys checking us out tonight. What else have to tell you about? I guess that's it, man. I guess that's about all we got right now. Is that all we got? That's it. Check out Food Revolution happening this Saturday out in New Canaan. That's going to be from 10 to 12 out in New Canaan in Pop-Up Park. It's going to be a lot of fun. $5 for kids. Find it on Eventbrite. A lot of fun. Next week, I should have a big announcement about an event we got coming up. Very excited about it. Hopefully, we can tell you guys more about that stuff next week if we can get the permits listed. That's what we're waiting on. We're waiting on permits. Just FYI. I don't hide shit. I want to tell you about it now, but if they don't give us the permits, then we can't do it. But we're working on it. I feel confident in it. I feel very, very confident in it. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Chef Plum. You've been checking out the number one live digital audio food program on Monday nights, and I appreciate you so much for checking that out. In the meantime and in between time, you can follow me on Twitter at Chef_Plum and on them Instagrams at Chef_Plum. And don't forget, Facebook at Chef_Plum with two F's. We're working on that. It's a long fucking story. And don't forget to follow my friend Marisol, our guest tonight. Thank you tremendously for coming on and talking at BreadButterNYC on Instagram, BreadButterNYC on Snapchat, and Marisol Salazar on Twitter. Guys, food is one of the most important things that we have in life. Everything important in life happens around food. Let's make sure we give it the time that it deserves, and I'll see you guys next Monday night. Peace.